For the next few weeks, we're going to talk about a book of the Bible and hover on a question, the question that all of us might ask from time to time, a question that's present in our lives from time to time. And that question is simply this: what happens in a world where everybody does what they want? Now, to some of you, that sounds pretty appealing, but what happens in a world where everybody does what they want? And perhaps if you are if you're a parent, you may feel like you're living in that world right now, that just there's a tiny little dictator that just does whatever they want, and you're kind of subject to their rule. You might work with people, and it's like, man, this guy shows up and does whatever he wants, whenever he wants. And those aren't fun people to work with, generally. But if that's the rule, what happens in a world where everybody does what they want? In America especially, we have a couple of sayings that we like to throw out there. We are all for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It used to be said perhaps there should be a chicken in every pot. But the real American dream, kind of the underbelly of the American dream, but the real American dream is this: I want to do what I want, when I want, with whom I want. That's really the American dream. In fact, that's everybody's dream. And we only put a little asterisk next to it there to make it the American dream, because we say it like this: I want to do what I want, when I want, with whom I want, and it's okay as long as it doesn't hurt anybody, right? Yeah, you've heard that before. This is the real American dream. And we're nice and morally civilized, so we say, I want to do what I want, when I want, with whom I want. As long as it doesn't hurt anybody, it's fine. But you know this, and we know this. If you do this, if this is your life mantra, if you do this for very long, you will ultimately hurt someone. You might hurt yourself. You might hurt your parents. You might hurt the people around you. You might hurt the people coming after you, right? Many of you perhaps even bear like scars or old wounds because you grew up with parents that lived this way, and that affected you because it felt like they were doing what they wanted, when they wanted, with whom they wanted, and you were kind of not the top priority. Many teenagers kind of hit this, right? When those hormones start raging, you just turn into this person that lives exactly like that. You know, and then many of you have gone through or will go through or are going through a midlife crisis, right? Which is essentially just your teenage years, again, only with more money and overweight. So you're doing exactly what a teenager would do if a teenager had access to their 401k, right? You're doing what you want, when you want, with whom you want. That's what a midlife crisis is. But this idea of what happens in a world where everybody kind of does whatever they want is the main point or the main subject that's going on in the book that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the book of Judges for a few weeks. Now, the book of Judges is just kind of a piece of Israel's history. It comes after Joshua. Joshua took over from Moses and led the people into the promised land. And then later on, they would be given a king. King Saul would be the first king. And there's about a 300-year period of time where the book of Judges covers. And it was a very simple concept, or it seemed simple at the time. God was the king. They didn't need a king because God was the king. God had given them a law, so they would be a nation of laws under God, and they would be administered by judges. So they didn't need a king. God was the king. They'd be a nation of laws administered by judges. But what happens, because of the question that we just asked, because of people doing what they want, when they want, with whom they want, and because of their choices that they chose to make, they ended up in an endless cycle. And the endless cycle looked like this. It was simply disaster, followed by disobedience, followed by deliverance, lather, rinse, repeat. Just over and over. Disobedience and disaster, and then God would deliver them over and over. In fact, if you turn to any given chapter of the book of Judges, it's not a long book. If you turn to any chapter, you will most likely see the phrase, "The people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord." If I told you to find that verse, you could probably find it in just about all the chapters of Judges, because it happens over and over and over and over. They disobey, there's some kind of calamity or disaster, God delivers them, and they do the same thing over and over again. And to really get kind of a synopsis or a good summary of what this period of history looked like, you actually go to the end of the book of Judges. The very last verse in Judges, it's a verse that we've looked at before, kind of sums up the whole experience. Judges chapter 21, verse 25 says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." So everybody did what they want, when they wanted, with whom they wanted. And that was kind of how this culture operated. So the end of Judges is kind of a bleak outlook. It's not a culture that you would want to be a part of. It's not a culture that you would want to live in. But the beginning of Judges, which is where we're going to start, paints a completely different picture. The beginning of Judges is basically like, and many of you who have either gone or you've had kids that go, you know what I'm talking about. The beginning of Judges is kind of like the last night of church camp. Okay, last night of church camp, a couple things happen. Like half the kids get saved and everybody cries, right? If you've been to church camp, you know how that works, right? If you don't cry on Thursday, like that's you have to cry by Thursday. That's how church camp works. And you have this huge spiritual experience. Now, it's not to discount those experiences. People make really significant decisions and really important decisions and sincere decisions. So we're not discounting what happens there. But it's a spiritual and emotional high that you come off of. Many of you experience the same thing when you come back from a retreat or a camp meeting or a revival. You're just on this high. How many of you ladies were at the Priscilla Shower simulcast yesterday? All right? How many of you feel awesome today? Right? Because it's just, you're on the high, and you had this experience, and it was a time of worship and learning, and it's just like, man, I can conquer the world. And you come back from church camp, and it's like, I'm gonna break up with that person, and I'm gonna stop doing that, and I'm gonna patch that up, and I'm gonna be a missionary, and that's how it's gonna work. And that's what the people were experiencing. They just come through this incredible spiritual experience. And so Joshua is talking to them. He's the one that led them into the promised land. Now, we don't always have this benefit in the Bible. Sometimes books are just wedged in a weird spot in history, and they didn't actually occur in chronological order. The book of Judges is in chronological order. So to find out what happened before the book of Judges, you actually just have to turn to the book of Joshua right before it. Everything's kind of in order. So to find out what happened at the beginning of the book of Judges, you go to the end of the book of Joshua. Joshua gathers everybody around. It's the last night of church camp. He's given them the victory speech. He's given them the pep talk, if you will. And in Joshua chapter 24, he tells them this. It says, "Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord." Okay, he's like, look, we have record. Your parents, your fathers, we have record and we know of their failures. We know of their unfaithfulness. Don't do that. Okay, verse 15. "And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served in the region beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." So he gathers everyone together. He's like, look, we're in the promised land now. You have to choose which king you're going to serve. Verse 16, "Then the people answered, 'Far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. For it is the Lord our God who brought us and our fathers up from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, and who did those great signs in our sight and preserved us in all the ways we went and among all the peoples through whom we passed.'" Verse 18 says, "And the Lord drove out before us all the peoples, the Amorites who lived in the land. Therefore, we also will serve the Lord, for he is our God." It's the last night of revival. Like, we God is our king. We have the law. You don't have to worry about us, Joshua, because we are good to go. God's done all this stuff for us. And we're like, yeah. And the next couple of verses, if you read along, Joshua actually kind of pokes at them a little bit, and he taunts them a little bit. And he says, look, if history is any indication, you could use a reminder. If history is any indication, look, I'm just telling you this stuff because I don't want you to forget, because I don't want you to turn your back on God, and you seem like the kind of people that would do that, so I want to remind you of this. And finally, in verse 21, Joshua is talking to him, and the people said to Joshua, "No, but we will serve the Lord." They are sturdy in their resolve. And then something happens. Joshua dies. And we turn the pages of history just as easily as we turn the pages from Joshua to Judges. And as we flip the pages of history, now, historically speaking, it's the day after the last day of church camp. It's the day after the last day of revival. It's the day after the simulcast. And in Judges 2, chapter 2, verse 11, it says, "And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals." They hadn't even changed clothes from Joshua's funeral. They hadn't even unpacked from church camp. They hadn't even gotten rid of all the food left over from the simulcast. And they turned their back and served the gods of Baal right after Joshua died. Verse 12 says, they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them and bowed down to them and provoked the Lord to anger. They looked around at the people around them. And they said, hey, it wouldn't be so bad to have some of that. You know, we do live in Canaan now, and it would be rude to not at least try to assimilate in the culture a little bit. It would be maybe even a little offensive to the Canaanites if we didn't at least learn some of their customs, some of their ways, so they begin to immerse themselves in this culture. Verse 13 says, they abandoned the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtaroth. Now, these foreign gods, it wasn't just that they weren't worshiping their god anymore. The gods of Baal, when people would worship them, when it wouldn't rain or where there would be a lack of food or anything significant going on in their lives, the people who worshiped Baal would sacrifice people. They would sacrifice children to try to please the gods, to try to get God's attention. So not only were they turning their back on worshiping their god, but they were participating. You could not worship Baal without participating in these activities. So they were now dipping, God's people were dipping into this horrible lifestyle. Verse 14 says, so the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he gave them over to plunderers who plundered them, because that's what plunderers do. And he sold them into the hand of their surrounding enemies so that they could no longer withstand their enemies. Verse 15 says, whenever they marched out, the hand of the Lord was against them for harm, as the Lord had warned, and as the Lord had sworn to them, and they were in terrible distress. Now, this seems kind of harsh, that God gets so upset. But he basically just says, okay, if that's what you like, you can have it. If that's the culture that you like, and if that's the culture that you want to immerse yourself in, you can have it. I won't stop you. But, fair warning, you will ultimately be conquered by the culture that you're trying to copy. You will lose your freedom. Do you remember Egypt? You will lose your freedom. They willingly walked away. They willingly embraced a pagan culture. They did what a lot of us do, or a lot of us have done, and the end result is always, always, always the same. They forsook the Lord. They followed the people around them, and they surrendered their freedom. Ultimately, they surrendered their freedom. And this is the way that always, always, always works. When you forsake the Lord and when you follow the people around you, ultimately, you will surrender your freedom. It's not like they lived without a king. They simply traded one king for another. They willingly walked away, and then they found themselves in a place where they couldn't walk away from. They said, I don't need a king. But they didn't gain freedom. They just simply traded one king for another. And this is where their story and our story just kind of hits a crossroads, because we are in that same situation. None of us created ourselves. Okay, we were all created. And so the autonomy or the freedom that we all kind of crave and want, it's part of the American dream, doesn't really exist, because we will all bow to something. And so they did not lose their king, they just traded one king for another. And saying no to the creator king is saying no to another king. And some of the other kings are some of the little kings that we oftentimes bow to. Things like appetite, lust, greed, insecurity, fear, consumption. We know what these things are, but they're so broad, because even something like appetite, that has nothing to do with, not always something to do with food. That's just simply desiring more of something than you should have. You know, the king of insecurity. Oftentimes our faith is stifled by bowing to the king of insecurity, because I'm not brave enough, strong enough, bold enough to do X, Y, Z. I can't change the culture, because I can't even change my cubicle. So we're a slave to the king of insecurity. We're oftentimes a slave to the king of family history, right? There's two goals that we have. We either want to be just like our parents, except maybe do it a little bit better and make a little bit more money. Or perhaps the more common goal is, please don't let me turn out like my parents, right? And so we bow, I'll make any decision I need to make, just please don't let me turn out like my parents. And we do everything we can to break that cycle, and ultimately, because we're bowing to a different king, we never break the cycle. Because the only bet of breaking the cycle is to surrender to the Creator King. And understand that we look at this list, and you know, lust and greed and all that kind of stuff is so easy to point out. And we think about these little kings as it's always really bad, like habits and vices. And, you know, as long as you don't drink, smoke, or cuss, you're fine. You know, those are the kings we really need to worry about. But really, the little kings are anything that we say yes to, that in order to say yes to it, you have to say no to God. It's a matter of priority. And a little king is anything that you have to say yes to that involves saying no to God. And it moves you from a place, of I won't to I can't. It always starts off, I won't. I won't do this, I won't do that. You know, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. And if you say yes enough, you will eventually get to the point of where I can't. Now I can't say no. It starts off, you know, with, you know, nobody can tell me what to do. And now it's, I can't say no. And the reason you can't say no to the little kings is because they don't love you. The little kings don't have your best interest at heart. The harsh reality of serving the little kings is this. It's always easier to say no to God than it is to say no to the things we substitute for God. It is really easy to say no to God because God is a merciful king that allows you to say no to him. It's always easier to say no than to the things we substitute for God. Those things are so hard to say no to. And we justify, you know, everybody needs a thing and this is my thing and I'm just going to say yes to it. And eventually we get to the point where we wish we could say no and we can't. And we're not just talking about terrible, terrible, awful addictions. We're talking about the things that you say yes to that you know you should have said no to and now you can't say no to. Some of you, if you're in a certain point in your career, you have to say yes to your career. That has to be top priority. I have to make money. I have to take care of my family. I have to do this. But oftentimes saying yes to your career means that you have to say no to church or to God or to some direction you know you should move into, but you know, I've got to say yes to this. And you know what? Saying no to that is a lot harder than saying no to God. If you're a parent or if you're a student right now, sometimes you are caught in the trap of I have to say yes to this academic pursuit, this athletic pursuit, this extracurricular pursuit. I have to, because that's what I have to do. And it's very difficult to say no to that, and it's so easy to say no to God. But the substitute kings are not merciful. The substitute kings do not love you, and the substitute kings will take your freedom. You will feel like you have to say yes to them, and you will get to a point where you can no longer say no to them. Because maximum freedom is found under the canopy of God's authority. That's where freedom comes from. So if we go on in the book of Judges and we get to chapter 3, the people did evil in the sight of the Lord. And chapter 3, verse 8 says, therefore the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia. And the people of Israel served Cushan-Rishathaim 8 years. God says, if you love their ways, you can have their king. At least my name is easier to pronounce. You've immersed yourself in their culture. You've taken on their ways. So there you go. Now they will rule over you. The things that you said yes to, now you cannot say no to. And at the end of 8 years, They were essentially slaves again for another 8 years. And at the end of 8 years, they did what you have done, and they did what some of you need to do, and they did what some of us have to do from time to time. They simply threw their hands in the air, and they said, God, please deliver us. God, we have sinned. God, we were fools. God, in expressing our independence and our autonomy, we didn't gain anything. We simply became slaves to the culture that we tried to copy. And as it always happens, after disaster, after disobedience, there was in fact deliverance. After disaster and after disobedience. Because God is a merciful God, and God will let you choose. Why is it so easy to say no to God? Because he lets you. The other kings do not. If God wanted to control you, he would have created you as such. God loves you, and he simply wants you to love him back, something the little kings have no understanding of. This thought is all throughout Scripture, and it's presented to us from Jesus' perspective in John chapter 8. When he's speaking to the Pharisees in John chapter 8, verse 34, it says, Jesus answered to them, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. Jesus says, you don't get to dabble in sin. You don't get to have a trial run at serving these little kings and these other kings. You make the choice, and the next thing you know, they will be your master, and you will be their slave. And it could be a matter of an addiction or a vice or those terrible things that good folks just stay away from. Or it could just simply be a misplacement of your priorities. If you do not prioritize me over and over and over and over, eventually you will be a slave to a different, completely different set of priorities. In verse 36, he gives us the hope. So if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. You can be free. And that's the thing that the Israelites would learn in the book of Judges. That's the thing that we'll be looking at the next few weeks. And that's the thing that we all must know to be true is God will take you back over and over and over and celebrate your return even when you come back. Because there's freedom through Christ and there's forgiveness through Christ, and there always is. So then why do we focus on this so much? If there's always freedom and there's always forgiveness, why do we focus on it? I was having a conversation with one of our Bible fellowship teachers who teaches the students. And they were caught in this balance of, you know, I want my kids to know that there's forgiveness, you know, and deliverance, and they can always come back to God, and you know, but I don't want to oversell that because I don't want them to go out and do bad things knowing that they can be forgiven for them. You know, and if I tell a bunch of teenagers that they can go do something and be forgiven for it, who knows what they'll do with that information, right? Well, the same thing we'll do with it. We'll get it wrong and we'll mess up. But the reason we harp on this, even though there's forgiveness and even though there's deliverance and God will celebrate you every single time you return to him, the reality is you cannot relive your 20s. You can't relive your 40s. You cannot reparent your children. Many of you are out of broken homes or broken relationships or have severed relationships with people, and it's like, man, if I could go back and be a different son, a different daughter, a different father, a different mother, a different cousin, whatever the case may be, I would do that, and I can't do that. I can't reparent my child, and I can't fix that anymore. So we talk about this, and we look at the example of the Israelites throughout this time period, not to diminish God's forgiveness and diminish God's deliverance, but to look at the consequences in which they suffered, because God always took them back. But there was pain and destruction and things that they could have avoided. In our attempt to do what we want, when we want, with whom we want, it's essentially it's a waste of time and a waste of relationship. In this pursuit of freedom, and we never get freedom, because freedom can only be found under the canopy of God's authority, we simply trade one king for another. So that's what we'll be looking at in this series over the next few weeks, is a portrait of people. It doesn't It doesn't take strong thread to parallel this culture against our own. A culture where oftentimes you find yourself immersed in it, and before you know it, you're doing things that you said, I won't do, I won't do, I won't do, I won't do. Well, now I can't not do. Their culture is so parallel to ours, that's why we're talking about it. And in our pursuit, we have to decide what king we will serve, because you will serve a king. You just have to decide whether you're going to serve one king or another.